President Obama's visit to Alaska has had mixed reviews. There's praise for bringing attention to the rapid pace of climate change, but criticism for approving offshore exploration in the lead-up to his trip here. I'm Lori Townsend. Alaska Governor Bill Walker had the president's ear at the beginning of his trip. What did the governor want the commander-in-chief to understand about Alaska's complicated relationship with development and conservation? Governor Bill Walker joins us to talk about what he heard from the president and what he hopes the visit means for Alaska's future today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Pictures and video of a smiling President Obama dancing with kids in Dillingham and Kotzebue, a stern warning that the country isn't moving fast enough to address climate change, and a speech about rapid melt while standing on Exit Glacier. These are the highlighted images on a carefully orchestrated trip to Alaska by the president, but there were also protests in Anchorage by those opposed to drilling in the Arctic, and the president answered no news media questions about Arctic exploration or anything else while he was here. But Governor Bill Walker is willing to give us some insight into his meetings with the president. We'll also discuss other important issues facing the state. Governor Walker, thank you so much for being here today.
Always my pleasure, Lori.
Thanks so much. So let's get started with the beginning of the trip. How did the idea of you flying to Washington to ride back to Alaska on Air Force One come together? Was this your idea or did the White House advance
it? No, it was my idea. As it got closer to the trip, I had one meeting in the White House a couple of months ago trying to help them focus. And every week I would have a call with the White House. And so the last call with them, it looked like my only time was going to be in a ride in the motorcade from Jay Bear over to the Captain Cook, which would not be much time. And so I did not think that was a sufficient time. So I suggested that I go to D.C. and fly up with them on Air Force One. And they said, wow, you do that? I said, I would. They said, well, we've never done that before, so let's check. So the next morning at about 9 o'clock, my chief of staff, burst into my office with excitement. He said, the White House just called, and you're on Air Force One somehow.
And so somehow.
So I sort of took it upon myself to sort of push for that, and I'm glad I did. It was really a great opportunity to spend lots of one-on-one time with the president before he got to Alaska, rather than trying to catch a moment while he's here.
Yeah. Well, you answered this question. I was going to ask if that's unusual, because I thought, is this something that governors do, go and come into the state like that? So apparently this is unusual.
Well, I think it is. And I think what's different is, a lot of the states, when they go someplace, I'm not trying to say that they're so small and we're so large, but it doesn't take very long to get there if you're going from Washington to Florida or those kinds on the East Coast, whatnot. So coming to Alaska 7 hours was really, it was really a unique opportunity. And I don't know if it's... it's been done before. I don't keep score of that kind of stuff. I just want to get done all I can get done. So it was a great, great one-on-one opportunity with the president.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and Governor Bill Walker is our guest today. He's in the studio with us to talk about President Obama's recent trip to Alaska. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you have questions, you can call 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 statewide. Or in the Anchorage area, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can email us also at talk@alaskapublic.org. Walk us through the protocol of being on such a flight. What time did you have to meet with the president, and how much time did you have in the air?
Well, we had 7 hours in the air. We met at Andrews Air Force Base, where I went on to Air Force One, and that was just the whole seeing Air Force One is one thing, but actually climbing that long stairway onto the plane was like it was really a moment for me. Because it was just 1 year ago today that the Unity ticket was formed, and then you know, here we are. I am on Air Force One, so it was pretty impressive. You know, about a half hour into the flight, they announced on the flight that when the president was on board, and so off we took off, and about a half hour later, the president comes and, you know, visits with me, and we chat about a couple of things, but he brought with me him a letter from Secretary Burwell on the Medicaid expansion waivers we've been asking for since December 1st, since we were sworn in. And so it was, she granted the majority of what we had asked for. And one of the waiver requests, actually they changed national policy so they could give it to us. When I asked before about it, she said, well, we couldn't give you that waiver because nobody else would have that. So what they did is they changed everybody else's. 46 states benefited from Alaska asking for this particular waiver. And Commissioner Davidson can go into that in much more detail. But so that was a nice start of a conversation with the president when he hands me that letter. So we had a nice, our first visit on Air Force One, went through a briefing book that I had put together. Then we, he said, have you ever had a tour? And I said, no, I haven't. He said, well, let me show you the plane.
So he takes Have you ever had a tour? No, yeah. I haven't been on Air Force One before, sir. Yeah.
So I tried to act like I'd been there before, but I never had, so I had a hard time acting that way. But so he took me on a tour from stem to stern on Air Force One, and I tell you, he can go wherever he wants to go. So we went up on the flight deck and spent some time with the pilots up there on the flight deck, and then up into the, you know, to his living quarters, and you know, big, you know, it doesn't have any sort of feel of an airplane to it. It's a big, you know, it's a bedroom with a, you know, walk-in closet, walk-in huge bathroom, and a number of conference rooms up there, and there's small conference areas, a large conference room in the middle, which I spent, you know, a fair amount of time there talking with the president. And along the side, if you want to look out the windows, you have to actually get down on your knees to look out the windows because there are no chairs along the side. It's all sort of, everything's sort of pulled in from the where you're normally by the windows are sort of walkways to, you know, some eating area or the kitchen or the, you know, various conference rooms and whatnot. So it's very comfortable, very spacious. It's just a different way to travel for sure.
Well, I want to get into what the discussion was, but before that, let's back up a little bit to the letter that you got on Medicaid waivers. There was a lot going on in the days that the president was here, but I don't recall hearing anything about that. Are we talking about some news that others don't know about
now? I think we put something out as I recall, but there was just such a, you know, a flurry of other activity going on. We may have to reissue that because we're very pleased about that. It's a significant benefit to Alaskans with the Medicaid expansion, the different waivers that we've obtained now. So we were, you know, working on that. I met with Secretary Burwell, I think probably four or five times in person, talking about the different waiver requests, and so here to have it handed to us to me on Air Force One was really, really very special.
Mm-hmm. And Governor Walker, did you have like a list of things that you were determined to discuss with the president while you had his undivided attention on Air Force One?
I did. I absolutely did. I thought, you know, I wanted to be respectful of his time, but on the other hand, I wanted to make sure that I got my issues in for Alaska on this trip. So I talked about the economy a bit, what's happened to us on the oil as a result of the price of oil dropping. I talked about responsible development in Alaska, resource development, and we talked about some of the rural issues in Alaska, the cost of energy, education issues, healthcare issues. And you know, it was a matter of we can self-heal. We just need to have access to responsible development of our resources. So that was the general theme of what we talked about. So with the gas line, of course, I can't say hello to anybody without bringing up the gas line to some degree. So we had plenty of discussion on the gas line. So that was where I think was probably most focused as far as a response. And he's been very supportive of the gas line.
Did you have other meetings with him while he was in state, or was your audience with him on Air Force One
Pretty much on Air Force One. I did have one meeting when we had a roundtable discussion with tribal leaders the day we arrived, about an hour and a half after we landed. And that was you know, I was in a part of that meeting, but the bulk of my discussion with the president took place on Air Force One.
All right. And how about follow-ups? Are you planning follow-ups with him now that he's been here and he's been to the Arctic and possibly understands some of the challenges here a little better?
Well, I certainly will. And one of the biggest benefits of being on Air Force One was being able to meet with people that his closest advisors. In other words, as we talked about a subject, he would say, Brian over here is the person that you deal with on that. And so I'd spend time with Brian. And then, so other people I met on the plane were the advisors, the go-to people. So that was really a huge benefit that I would not have had if we were in a one-on-one meeting here in Anchorage someplace. I wouldn't have had the benefit of those people in the room. So it really was a huge advantage from that standpoint. So now I know who to go back to on different issues.
Great. The Denali Commission was sort of on life support a few years ago, but the Obama administration has tasked the Denali Commission with helping to coordinate resources for communities dealing with erosion and slumping permafrost. What are your thoughts about this? Will it have a notable impact, or people have been trying to sort out, has this been somewhat just shuffling bureaucracy from one agency to another, and is there a lot of new resources coming in, or how do you see this move with the Denali Commission?
Well, I was very pleased to see the focus on the Denali Commission, of course, created by late Senator Ted Stevens, and it was really a way of dispersal of federal funds throughout Alaska to the maximum benefit of Alaskans. So to see the administration, the president, sort of embrace the Denali Commission as sort of the focal point of some of the funding opportunities, I think was very good. We had a meeting there, on the Tuesday when the president was here. He was not at the meeting. He was in Seward that day. But we had a meeting with, I co-chaired a meeting with White House senior advisors on energy technology and Dr. Holdren. They really are looking at the Denali Commission as a vehicle moving forward.
1-800-478-8255 is the number statewide. If you'd like to join our conversation today on Talk of Alaska, we have Governor Bill Walker in the studio with us. 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. That's 550-8422. You can also email us, talk at Alaska Public. Governor, we have no less than 3 calls on the line, all about the King Cove Road. So we're going to take a call from Henry Mack. Good morning, Mr. Mack.
Hey, good morning. Governor, this is Henry Mack from King Cove, the mayor.
Yes.
And it was just awesome to see you last week when you stepped out of the plane with the president, and we were wondering, I wonder if he mentioned the access over to Cold Bay from King Cove, and you certainly have, and we appreciate your support, Governor, and bringing it out to the president. And this coming week, King Cove Group will be going down visiting D.C. and sitting around today with wondering, I wonder if the governor could maybe, with the relationship he had created with the president, request a chance meeting with the King Cove Group pertaining to the access over to the Cold Bay Airport. It's very crucial for us. It's a life-saving need that we need, and we just appreciate your support, what you've been doing for us. I'd like to invite you out to King Cove sometime this fall. Come out and stand on the bank and look over and watch the airplanes land. That we would love to get our sick grandmas and grandpas and young children who need to get out safely instead of waiting in a clinic and miserable nights, bad weather, where we could drive over there. Governor, we appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. And I did bring it up with the president, as I have brought it up with Secretary Jewell. And I have instilled upon them my passion for that issue, and it's been I spoke about it frequently during the campaign, and I continue to do so. I am working the channels that I've now established with Secretary Jewell and with the White House to gain access to make that happen. And it's just and I look forward to coming out there in person. I feel badly how I've not. I've been so surprised at how quickly my time gets consumed and the challenges we have in the state because of the price of oil and the deficit we're in, etc. But it's I wish you the best on your trip to D.C., Mr. Mayor, and your delegation. And I look forward to joining you in King Cove as soon as I possibly can get there.
Thanks, Governor. Appreciate it, and looking forward to you coming there too.
I'll probably be there hopefully in the month of October. I have a trip coming up to Japan next week. And then, so I'd like to very much like target October to get out there.
That'd be great. That's the ideal time.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Henry, for the call. Governor, when you're meeting with the president, or when you were meeting with the president, did he have people there taking notes? Was it a meeting just the two of you, or what's the protocol there?
Well, there were sort of three different times I met with the president. One time there was somebody there taking notes, as is typical. Another time it was just, you know, a couple guys sitting in a conference room talking about. And I gave my phone to one of the Secret Service folks. And I just said, you know, snap a picture. And he took tons of pictures and whatnot, which was certainly fine, of the president, myself, sitting in the conference room on Air Force One, sort of talking over these issues. And then the third opportunity was actually there were a couple of times on the Air Force One. And then the last one was in the motorcade on the drive over from Jay Bear over to the Captain Cook.
Mm-hmm.
So it was three or four different segments, I guess I'd say.
What about the issue of money for coastal communities that need to move because of storm erosion? There was a couple of million dollars put out, and that seemed to confuse some folks. They're like, $2 million, please. But it sounds as if this is more for studying the most urgent needs and who needs to kind of be in the queue first. What about the larger issue of the hundreds of millions of dollars it would take to move communities? Were you able to have part of that discussion, and is there any prospect for how this may go forward?
You know, I went to Kivalina the week before the president got here specifically for that, because I knew he was not going to be able to get to Kivalina, so I wanted to be able to talk about the village of Kivalina firsthand rather than secondhand. So I spent a part of a day in Kivalina and looked at their situation and mostly listened to their story. And I looked at the location that they would move to, where the new school would be built, which has already been approved. There's no road to get from Kivalina to the school. It's a problem. There's about a 2-mile body of water between. So I explained to the president that's why we are pushing so hard for the legislation the bill that Senator Lisa Murkowski introduced on the revenue sharing, and how that bill provides that a portion of the revenue sharing. So see, on offshore development, the state of Alaska receives no revenue. We receive some jobs and activity, and that's wonderful. But as far as actual revenue sharing, we don't. Now, the state of Florida and some of the Gulf Coast states, they receive 37.5% of the federal share. So all we're saying is that, you know, we wanted 25%. And so I explained that's what that would go towards. It would go towards, you know, issues associated with relocation of villages, rural energy, rural education, those kinds of things. And so that was an opportunity for me to sort of talk about the problem and also the solution. I sort of followed the Governor Hickel rule that you couldn't go into his office at the Captain Cook Hotel. You had 3 minutes, anybody in the hotel, minute and a half with the problem, minute and a half with the solution. So I used that same rule of thumb with me, is that I don't go in and say, here's the problem, Mr. President. I said, here's the problem, but here's a solution. We can solve this. And so we need to have our fair share of the take on offshore development. And so it was certainly a discussion. I mean, clearly, you know, a couple million dollars is only going to fund a study of some sort. And I'm not a big fan of studies. I much rather just go get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Why is there a disconnect between the Gulf states and Alaska when it comes to offshore revenue sharing?
Well, it was set up long ago, and the only development at that point was in the Gulf states, and so they, you know, never envisioned that there'd be more offshore further up the East Coast as well as up in the Arctic. Now, some of the other states, now there's an organization of East Coast states that I've joined as the governor of Alaska, associated with revenue, pushing for revenue sharing off of our coast. And so now the governor of North Carolina, Pat McGrory, is the chair. And so it's not just Alaska that's pushing for this. There are others as well that are pushing for this. So we might have a chance of actually getting that. So that would help significantly to get our you know, 25% share of the revenues.
The president had a serious and repeated message about the impacts of climate change to Alaska. How did you, or how do you see that discussion that he highlighted to really showcase the amount of climate change that's happening here? Is it helpful because Alaska is being so impacted, or is it sort of hampering because of the need to develop resources for cash in Alaska?
Well, I think that you can have both. I mean, but you can address it both ways. And actually what he's done, he's talked about oil, you know, being a bridge fuel. In other words, a fuel, we're not going to go on alternative energy, you know, overnight with a flip of a switch. It's going to be somebody's oil that's going to be used, and it should be ours. And I think I agree with him on that. It needs to be done responsibly. We continue to work towards renewable energy options. In fact, the legislature some years ago passed legislation with a goal of 50% by, I think it was 2025, I believe. And so that's good. So it's you know, for us to say no on additional, you know, oil development, someone's oil is going to be used. So it should be, and so he's pretty clear about that. So I appreciated that's not an inconsistent story. And I explained that the biggest thing Alaska can do on global warming is to build a gas line that natural gas is significantly cleaner, the cleanest burning energy that there is. So that's something we certainly agree on. Is the biggest thing Alaska can do to get us off the amount of diesel that we consume is bring natural gas to as many Alaskans as possible.
Did you talk about the concern about the lack of infrastructure, and if there is development in offshore waters, how the potential of a spill would be dealt with, an accident would be dealt with? Right now, there's next to nothing up there for assets and resources other than what Shell has been mandated to bring.
Right. And Exxon has some at Point Thompson as well. They have some response capability there. We did talk about that, about the, again, we're potentially at risk to development. I mean, water doesn't have a dividing line between, you know, I think our narrowest point, we're 3,000 feet from Russia in off of Diomede, so we're very close and try to get across the point that we do need infrastructure. So in addition to the revenue sharing, you know, if the federal government's going to receive the lion's share of the money, we need to make sure that they provide the infrastructure. And we just had a significant infrastructure conference in Alaska, on the Arctic Circle conference just prior to the president being here. So it's all those issues are on the plate. And I also mentioned about the military issues as far as the drawdown of the military in Alaska. At the same time, we've seen the largest buildup in Russia in the Arctic since the Cold War. So 10 new bases are being reopened on the Russian Arctic coast, as well as 4 new bases are being built. So we're not meeting that with an appropriate response.
I did want to discuss that a little bit. There was a story just today, in fact, a Russian intelligence vessel was spotted near a ship contracted by Shell, the Noble Discoverer, and a Pentagon spokesperson confirmed the sighting today, saying that no U.S. defense assets were deployed in response, recognizing the rights of sovereign nations to navigate in international waters. But it's interesting that they were there, and as we know, the Pentagon's also was tracking 5 Chinese vessels. One was a warship and a resupply ship and some other vessels that were close to the Aleutians. Certainly, they're in international waters. They can be in these areas. But the timing seemed interesting, especially with the president here and China comes floating along. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it is interesting, and it certainly made my point that the sort of where we're located and our closest neighbors aren't necessarily a neighboring state. And so it absolutely made my point on the military. I've been advocating that we should have a naval base in Alaska. We established a naval base because, you know, there's no question the Arctic is the new frontier. It's like reopening the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal. It's just going to open up the trade routes. It's going to open up the development. And we just I'm a big believer in being prepared rather than trying to respond to something we're not prepared for.
1-800-478-8255 is the number if you'd like to join us here on Talk of Alaska today. We have Governor Bill Walker in the studio with us. 1-800-478-8255 or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. 550-8422. And we are going to go to Caroline in Homer. Good morning.
Oh, hello, Governor Walker. I'm very excited about your time as being our governor in this wonderful state. Today I'm calling because I live in Homer, and I would like to see a rail service from Anchorage into Homer. The number one concern is safety. When there's an accident, the road is closed, and terrible, terrible accidents have occurred along that part of the highway with many deaths that could have been perhaps not have happened if there was a railroad. The number two thing is I heard President Obama talk about infrastructure, and I think a railroad down to Homer would be wonderful. Another thing that he mentioned was we need to get tourism going. Well, I think railroads would bring tourism into the Kenai Peninsula. And then the last thing is fuel efficiency. Railways, light railways anyway, have been proven to be very fuel-efficient ways to move people and goods. A route that I particularly... I've been looking at maps would be to go through Chicolin Flats and come out by North Kenai. That would deliver fishermen that want to fish in the Kenai River to the area where the fish are without driving that terrible highway. And I think there's freight that could be moved also. But mostly it would be people that I'm interested in moving. I've talked to some people on the railroad and they said they needed more freight than people. But that's what I've heard anyway. So I would like you to look into that, and perhaps some of the mayors on the Kenai Peninsula could be talking to you about that, because I think the railway into Seward's been proven pretty well, and although it's not open, but I would think a railway from the airport in Anchorage into Homer would be a wonderful attraction for Kenai Peninsula people.
Sounds like she's researched this quite well.
Thank you, Caroline. Caroline, thank you very much for that. I am a big fan of the railroad in general. In fact, we had a cabinet meeting on the railroad dialogue in the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and afterwards everybody got on the railroad, and we had a 12-hour cabinet meeting on the way back to Anchorage. So, the light rail has certainly been very successful in the Seattle area. I've taken the light rail from the airport downtown Seattle. It costs a couple dollars, and, boy, you get there lickety-split. So, there is an Alaska Railroad Master Plan I've not seen, but I know they've been working on it for a long, long time. Rail infrastructure, no question, is the cheapest way to move freight, and as you say, the safest way to move people. And we're always concerned about that, the number of accidents and tragedies we have on the highway in the summer, and rail certainly would help alleviate that. So we. I'm sure that we'll look at that and see what can be done certainly on the safety to begin with. What more could we do to make the highway safer, and look at the rail as an option? I know it's now is not our most lucrative time financially, tough to do, but I used to be in the tourism business, so I very much in favor of increasing that opportunity for Alaskan businesses and young people to work in those tourism businesses. So. And Homer's a beautiful place, so it's always a pleasure to get to Homer. I never get there often enough, but whenever I do, it's just a reminder of what a great state we live in. So, we will continue to look at the railroad and as an option. Caroline, thanks very much for your concern.
Thank you, Governor Walker. Thank you for serving.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that call, Caroline. We are going to take a short break here in a moment, but before we do that. And Governor, you might not be able to answer this listener question, but the question was, will the briefing book prepared for the trip on Air Force One with the president be available to the public?
I don't know why not. I'll have to check when I get back, but it wasn't anything particularly confidential. It was just a conversation with the president. So.
All right.
So.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will be continuing our conversation with Governor Bill Walker and taking your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska and our conversation today with Governor Bill Walker. Governor Walker, we were talking about the vessels. Well, we've been talking about a lot of things, but we were talking about the Russian vessels. The U.S. Northern Command was alerted to the Russian vessel presence on Sunday after the U.S. Coast Guard was first informed. Are you informed when something like that happens with when the Northern Command gets word? Do they tell you about these things?
You know, I did not get a notice on that. I'll probably ask for that in the future because that's a significant concern. And let me just say that we have an incredible Coast Guard presence in Alaska. I'm just so appreciative of what the Coast Guard does in Alaska. And so nothing I say about additional military is anything other than continue to be complimentary of the Coast Guard. They really have stepped up and always do. But that doesn't mean that we couldn't do more with a greater presence. But I did not get that notification, so I'm concerned about that.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting to read this morning that part of this concern over what's happening, the ramp up of the Russian military along their coast, that the Canadian listening post on Ellesmere Island is being upgraded, and it's part of the distance early warning or dew line stations. Is there any conversation about reactivating other dew station spots along the early warning line?
We have had discussions. Craig Fleener is a person who we actually created a position in my cabinet for the first time, a cabinet level position on Arctic policy. So Craig Fleener has been the person sort of most focused on that, and he's traveled back to D.C. numerous times on those issues. We just need to have a greater awareness of really what's about to happen and what is happening as we speak.
Mm-hmm. And according to this article this morning, just in the last year, most of the 16 U.S. intelligence agencies have assigned analysts to work full-time on the Arctic. How do you think this affects Alaska, or what do you think this means going forward?
Well, I mean, I think it means that there will be additional infrastructure. Once they do their monitoring, they're going to see what I've seen. I've seen some pretty concerning images of locations of submarines that have been in an area of Alaska that they've never violated any of the 3-mile zone. They're in the 200-mile limit zone, which is supposed to be for transit purposes, I'm glad that they're watching. I'm glad that they're looking at this because it makes, it helps us, and we're trying to convince Washington we need a greater presence militarily in Alaska. It's all about location. In World War II, we're one of the, probably the only location actually had boots on the ground of occupation. And it was in Alaska in the Aleutians. My dad was part of that he's part of the Alaskan Scouts in World War II in the Aleutians. So it's a, location is what it's all about. So we're a very strategic location. So we will continue to push aggressively for a greater presence in Alaska of military.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to the phones now. Tom is in Anchorage. Good morning, Tom.
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Tom.
You mentioned that natural gas was the lowest burning the lowest carbon burning fossil fuel, but that's only if the methane leakage is low and there are new technologies to capture carbon even from gas turbines. I was wondering if you would cooperate with EPA on reducing the methane leakage and with Department of Energy to develop new turbine technologies that would sequester the carbon produced in the exhaust. I was also wondering whether you're talking about the Coast Guard and our Western Alaska captain of the port zone is 2,500 miles long from Anchorage to the Canadian border, and otherwise the largest captain of the port zone is between San Francisco and Portland. And a lot of assets that are required to be near the captain of the port city are absent in Alaska because the Coast Guard doesn't properly fund and space those captain of the port zones. Will you ask the commandant for more captain of the port cities in Alaska? And I would appreciate. We're heavily dependent upon the aviation industry. Would it be possible to develop biojet fuel plants in Alaska because of the new EPA regulation of emissions from the aviation industry? Thank you.
Well, that's a lot of questions.
Yeah, a lot of questions, Tom. Let me try to move those through those. One advantage the only advantage of developing our natural gas efforts later than we should have is that the technology has advanced significantly. So we will certainly look at the most. I recently received from a friend some information on CO2 extraction, and so it could be the cleanest burning natural gas in the of any project as a result of new technology. So I'm a big believer in using new technology, and we'll certainly take a look at that. You know, on the what's frustrating for me on our maritime capabilities in Alaska on response is that, you know, our coastline exceeds all the coastline of the U.S. And so we look at some states that have, you know, 2% or 1% of what we have, and they have a much bigger presence there than we have. And so we need to make sure we match, and it's not necessarily the Coast Guard, it's really the funding vehicle that funds the Coast Guard that we need to be convincing, is that we need to have a response capability that is commensurate with the amount of coastline that we have. If we had that, we would answer every one of your concerns, I believe. And your third question about the bio jet fuel, I'm a big believer in that we need to be refining products in Alaska. I don't like to send out a raw product and bring back a finished product. So I'm all about, because with that raw product goes jobs, and I want as many jobs as possible in Alaska. So if there's a technology available for bio jet fuel, we'll certainly want to do that here.
All right. If you're joining us just now, this is Talk of Alaska, and Governor Bill Walker is our guest today. You can join us at 1-800-478-8255 or locally 550-8422. Continuing with the theme of energy just a bit here, Governor, there was an email question from someone in Southeast Alaska saying, you've expressed your support for expanding resource development in Alaska. Does that extend to new and proposed mines in British Columbia near transboundary rivers that flow into Alaska?
Well, you know, we recently had Energy Secretary Bennett was in Juneau and spent some time with Lieutenant Governor Malott, and they flew up and looked at the different mines and began a discussion and dialogue about our concern about what they're doing across the border. And so, you know, that's something that we are very concerned about, and that we're getting much more involved in than we have in the past. I know there's been a treaty. The past administration had a treaty on the transboundary treaty, which I thought was a good start, and they did a good job on that. But we need to go a step further to make sure we know sort of what they're doing, because they certainly, what happened there can certainly impact our waters and vice versa. So when we do, it could impact their waters as well. So I think we've had the highest degree of dialogue and engagement with them that of any administration, and we'll continue to do that. Lieutenant Governor Malott has done a great job in that, and we'll continue that to make sure that what's done there will not be done in such a way that it threatens our waters, our fishing, our livelihoods.
We're going to stick with energy just for a bit here and go to Mike in Anchorage. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Mike.
Great job so far. Yeah, I can't stress more as a student of geology who studied natural history that we have to get ourselves off fossil fuel. I mean, we're at 401 parts per million in the atmosphere already. We could put solar panels on our house. We could charge our cars via solar panels. You could keep a house solar from March to November in Alaska. I did 3 reports on this. I used to be a reporter. So the gas line is a step in the right direction, but we really need to accelerate our and wean ourselves the best way we can, as quick as we can, off fossil fuels, and we can do it. Germany is going to be off fossil fuels in 2020, and they're ahead of their solar energy plans right now. So anything that we can do to wean ourselves off fossil fuel again is a step in the right direction. We need to get really aggressive on it. A good place to go to for sources for sun, by the way, is a gentleman named Seifert. The website is aksun.org. That's all I got in a nutshell.
Okay, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much. You know, Kodiak has done an excellent job on that. Kodiak is like 99% on renewable between their hydro and their wind turbines, and they're like 1% on diesel. I've spent some fair amount of time with Chris Rose on renewable energy opportunities in Alaska. You're right. And some locations, of Norway is an example, they export all their non-renewable. They live off the renewable. And so they don't burn any fossil fuels. So that's a model we should be striving for, and I think we are. I mean, there are pockets of significant successes around the state. We need to expand those and let the non-renewable help fund the creation of the renewable energy sources. I look at, you know, where's Alaska going to be in 50 years or in 100 years? And I wish we'd done that some time ago, but I don't live in the past necessarily. But I am concerned about the future. And you're right about having an aggressive step towards renewables. Absolutely.
And Governor, staying on that same vein, an email question was about energy efficiency. Listener says, across our state, we spend millions of dollars annually on energy costs for public buildings. How will you prioritize energy efficiency efforts and especially the need to invest in energy efficiency in the years ahead? We've seen the state programs for weatherization upgrades and things that have been fantastic for people to take part in. We're in this big deficit situation right now. How do you think those programs can continue, or can they continue into the future?
Well, they can, maybe not at the same rate that they have in the past. I think you're right. We have done a good job on the residential side, but we haven't on the commercial side. I'm not sure. We have hundreds of buildings of state ownership, and we should start with get our own house in order first. And so that's something I've talked with Jack Haber of the Cold Climate Housing Research Facility in Fairbanks about that. And that's something that we're probably going to come up with some sort of a directive to have them help us do what we do better as far as on the commercial side, because energy, the biggest savings on energy is just efficiency, to start with that. We don't need to worry about bringing in another source of energy. Just make what we have more efficient. So Mike's right about that. We need to get our own house in order.
Mm-hmm. Governor, according to your staff, you're likely to call a special session on the gas line next month. Why do you think that's necessary?
Well, there's certain asks of our partners that the assurances they want and for a project to go forward under their direction that I can't give them. And so I can't give them without the legislature. And I have full respect for the legislature's role. And so it's going to take some time with them to see if what they're asking for in the way of fiscal certainty, will we need to change our constitution to give the fiscal certainty, those kinds of things. We think it'll be around the end of October. Nothing's for sure yet. I've been speaking in regularly with the leadership about that, sort of a timing aspect that works out for the legislature. And so, if there's a reason to have a special session, we will. If there's not, we won't go through the expense and the inconvenience of having one without a reason to have one.
Do you anticipate that will be in Juneau or in Anchorage?
I'm not sure at this point. I'll continue to discuss that with legislative leadership as far as the location of the special session. So,
what about the idea of buying out TransCanada's share of the project? What's the idea behind that at a time, especially now, when we're in deficit spending?
Well, the reason for that is right now we don't have any ownership interest in the pipeline at all, zero interest in that, or the upstream as well, in the gas conditioning. All we have right now is a 25% ownership in the liquefaction facility, which the pipeline is a pretty important piece of that. So as a result of that, we really don't have a legitimate seat at the table. TransCanada is a wonderful company. I've had no issues with them whatsoever, but, as a sovereign, we need to be at the table. And we can't really be at the table on the pipeline without buying out their interest. So I think it makes a lot of sense and to do that. And but it's really up to the legislature to create the funding for that, and it's really going to be their call on the financial side.
Do you think that that would make a gas line any more likely to become a reality? Is there a reason to think that way?
Well, there is. I mean, we wouldn't do it without it becoming more of a reality. You know, we have to, some want fiscal certainty for a project, and I'm demanding, completion certainty, that there's a project certainty that actually will happen. You know, we've looked at this wrestled with this issue for the last 35 years or so. It's time we get involved in the direction this goes, have a seat at the table, and be a significant participant in this process, a fellow partner with our other partners. So it's time. We have to have this. This is our biggest sort of get well opportunity we have on our resources right now, and we need to make sure we commercialize the trillions of dollars of value of natural gas that's on this North Slope today.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Roger is in White Mountain. Good morning, Roger.
Yeah, good morning. If oil prices stay at 30-ish a barrel, what kind of cuts are we looking at for next year's budget? Ballpark it. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. One thing I like about this show is to hear from somebody in White Mountain. I think I love that. That's great. Well, thanks very much, Roger, for listening and for calling in. I think there will be additional cuts this year. The last year we reduced the budget by about $1 billion. And so there'll be additional cuts this year. We're trying to do them very carefully because the more you cut, the deeper it hurts. And so we're very cognizant of that. So we are going through that process now to continue to look for areas that we can, consolidate, do things cheaper, do things, without necessarily the same personnel we did before. Now we start getting into programs, cutting programs, and that's when it starts to really hurt. But there will be more. I can't give an exact number today, but we're working on that now. The budget technically is due on December 15th to the legislature, and we'll certainly meet that deadline, if not better than that. So it's a challenge. It really is, because the question is how far into the savings. We only have so much on the savings side before that's gone. So we really need to get our financial house in order sooner than later.
Governor, lawmakers are in a hearing today, this morning, on the state's oil and gas tax credits. Do you think we'll see changes to those credits? And if so, what type of changes do you think we'll see?
Well, I think there will be changes to the credit plan. I mean, when the credit program first began, it was $10 million per year per company, and then it would increase to $25 million per year, and it was a limited amount. And so we have gone far beyond the original intent. When the cap came off, at some point the cap was removed on the limitation, and then we went to $700 million. Next year was projected to be $1.2 billion, the following year $1.8 billion. So at some point that would have exceeded education, and it would have been our highest cost. So I made some initial changes by vetoing $200 million. There certainly has been a discussion since then. We're going to work with the companies to make sure that that they can continue to do what they do, maybe in a little different fashion, but continuing to pay for up to 65% of the cost of exploration is really tough in low oil time. So we're working with them. They've been very cooperative. The companies have, and it's not about hurting anybody. It's about helping Alaskans.
We are going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Governor Bill Walker and take your calls on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Governor Bill Walker is our guest today. Governor, oil prices, as you are well aware, are still very bleak, hanging around $50 a barrel. What's your strategy going to be heading into the regular session?
Well, the strategy is going to be we need to address this. And so we're going to submit a proposal on how to address it. We think that's our job to step up and say, here's what it's going to take to sort of plan for the we need to strive for a balanced budget. And a balanced budget to me doesn't involve drawing down savings at a couple billion dollars a year. So it's going to be a sobering session from the standpoint of the financial side. And I think the legislators, I know the legislators are equally concerned as am I about the fiscal future of the state. What we don't want to do is we don't want to create a recession. And so we need to be mindful of that as well. We don't need to repeat what happened in the 80s as far as when there was a major cutback of industry as well as the state. We have we don't have a wealth problem. We have a cash flow problem. So we need to make sure that we manage our wealth in such a way that it's really to the benefit of our state. And we're really fortunate to have we have roughly $100 billion. I guess $99.1 billion is the number I was received as far as all accounts plus the permanent fund. So a permanent fund of 50+ billion is significant. And you know, the bond rating agencies kind of gave us a 1 year warning. They said, you've got 1 year to sort of get your financial act in order, house in order, or we will downgrade you. We still do have a triple-rated bond rating, which not every state has that. In fact, few states have that. But we do that because we have the financial wealth we have. The cash flow problem is what we need to manage. So we will we'll address that with the legislature, and we'll probably do that even before the session begins.
All right. Well, let's hit the phone lines a little bit here. We've got callers stacking up. Doug is in Copper Center. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Thank you, Governor, for all the hard work you've done this year. I think we're, a lot better off because of you. But what I wanted to just talk about a little is education funding, and specifically the lawsuit that is pending by Ketchikan, and I think that I think we really need some reform in how we're delivering education to especially rural Alaska, and I hope you would consider this. I live in a rural district. I think we're way too top heavy right now. I think that we need to combine some of these smaller districts so that we only have one superintendent for, 500 students instead of three. And also, I think that, under the Constitution, it says that the state will provide a public education. And I would really like to see more consolidation within the Department of Education. And if we're going to, whether you call it Common Core or whatever the curriculum you want to call it, we need to start looking at, a senior at South High is using the same book as a senior in Kenny Lake, say. But I think there's ways to save money in the Department of Education without just throwing out the whole funding formula and playing games with it. So I'll just, I just wanted to put that in your ear. But thank you so much. I really appreciate your hard work.
Thanks, Doug, for the call. Governor?
Yep, thank you. Thank you for the comment on education. By the way, I was really disappointed some years ago when the Copper Center Lodge burned, and I hope that the Ashby's sourdough pancake recipe is still alive and well, because he had one of the best sourdough pancakes. I'm a real fan of sourdough pancakes. So education, it's a huge issue for us, and it's a huge challenge for us. One of the biggest funding issues is education. We need to look at ways of addressing that in such a way that does not hurt the classroom, doesn't impact the classroom. So we are addressing that. Commissioner Hanley and I meet regularly on that, looking for ways of delivering the product in such a way that it's cost effective, and given the financial means that we're in right now. So yeah, you're right. Education is one of the constitutionally mandated obligations we have, we take it seriously, and we're doing all we can to make sure that the it doesn't say quality of education in one location to another. It's an equal education across the board, and that's what we're trying our best to deliver, and work with the different educational associations and school board associations, superintendent associations to make sure that we accomplish that.
Governor, I want us to be able to try to get at some of these calls and questions that we have, even though they're all over the place. We have Jeff on the line from Anchor Point. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Lori and Governor Walker. Thank you, Governor Walker. For what it's worth, I voted for you.
Thank you.
Quickly, Jeff, we're running out of time. Quickly.
Why are we going to destroy a salmon stream mining for coal to go to China and come back and acidify our oceans across here in Chinitno watershed across the inlet?
You know, I have a series of meetings coming up on that. A group is going to come and talk to me about that on both sides of those issues. So I understand what you're saying, and obviously you're not alone on that issue. There's quite a bit of concern about that particular project. So we will we'll look at that and see. Like I've seen on my calendar, I've got some meetings coming up soon, like this week or after I get back from this next trip. So we'll take a look at that. I hear what you're saying.
All right. Thank you, Jeff, for that call. We have some email questions as well. One from Barbara says, during the Glacier Conference or your conversations with President Obama, was the law of the sea treaty mentioned? What is our position, or what is your position, I'm assuming she means, on the law of the sea? And if you support it, what steps are you taking to help get it ratified?
You know, that's more of a national issue than a state issue, but since I asked the question, I am in favor of us being part of that, because if you're not at the table, you don't have much of a say. And so I think we need to be at the table on that, and I think that us not being at the table, I think, makes it difficult for us to be heard. So I'm in favor of us being at that table.
Well, I wish we could get to more calls, but we're running out of time. Governor, I think my last question would be, what about revenue generation? We've heard talk of a sales tax, an income tax, capping the permanent fund. None of these options alone comes close to filling the budget gap. What do you think is going to be necessary?
I think it's going to be necessary is it's going to take a number of, a little piece of all of those to make it work, rather than, you know, we've got probably 20 levers that we can pull. We don't want to pull on any one of them too hard and we have to look at the, not just the revenue it creates, we have to look at the impact on, in other words, some dollars we collect, for every dollar we collect, it costs 75 cents to collect the dollar. That's not a very efficient way to do it. It creates more government, more positions, and that's not necessarily our goal. So it's a delicate piece. It's one that I think we need to have a plan going forward, one that's a multi-year plan to bring us into balance.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Governor Bill Walker, for being our guest today on Talk of Alaska. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Josh Edge on phones.
Thank you so much.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. There is still time to start the Business Administration and Management program at Alaska Pacific University. Module 2 courses start on Wednesday, October 21st. More at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media, brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.